This is Digital Story Podcast number 992, March 16th, 2025. Today's theme is, everyone seems to love the Fujifilm GFX100RF, except for me. I'm Derek Story. Fujifilm is the genius behind some of the most interesting cameras of our time. And the just-announced GFX100RF certainly belongs in that category. It's beautiful, innovative, and relatively compact. I've been reading and thinking about this camera since its debut, and as much as I admire it, it's not for me. I'll explain why in today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So I think Fujifilm's announcement with this new camera is what we were thinking it was going to be, where they take an X100 compact camera and they take a GFX medium format camera and they mush them together into a camera that is not as big as the GFX, but a little bit bigger than the X100 series cameras. Has a medium format sensor inside, has a fixed lens on there with a 28 millimeter equivalent, has a lot of the Fujifilm magic, but it's missing a few things as well. And it has a price tag of around $5,000, okay? So it's not an impulse buy, but many people seem very thrilled about it. And it feels like a lot of people are going to put down their money for this camera. Let me read you a few headlines that I ran into when I was doing my research about this camera, and I was a little bit surprised, to tell you the truth. I think the Fujifilm GFX100RF is everything I've wanted. Fujifilm GFX100RF review, one sensor, nine cameras. Fujifilm GFX100RF review and X100 all grown up. And they go on and on from there. And most people are very excited about this camera. And I was thinking, why are they so excited? I mean, it's a cool camera, but it's not a camera that I would want to carry around all the time. So I thought, okay, let's dig into this camera just a little bit and find out what it's all about. And then I'll talk a little bit about why I think it's an interesting camera, but not necessarily one that I would purchase. The camera comes with a lens hood, a filter adapter ring, two lens caps, and a 49 millimeter protective filter, which is really nice because those are the elements, just like the X100V and 6, those are the elements, the accessories that you need to make the camera fully weather resistant. So it's nice that they include that in the kit. The camera weighs 735 grams with the card and battery. It's about the same size as an X-Pro3 with a 23 millimeter lens attached. So that gives you an idea of how compact and what magic Fujifilm worked to get a medium format camera in that form factor. It comes with a 35 millimeter F4 lens. It has scene detection. Electronic EVF, no optical option. It has crops for 35 millimeter, 45 millimeter, 63 millimeter, and 80 millimeter. Now, those are medium format numbers, not the equivalent. Like, for instance, the 35 millimeters equivalent of 28 millimeters in full frame thinking. It also has an aspect ratio dial. It's priced at $4,899 right now. Has dual card slots, and has image stabilization only for video. Okay, so for still photography, it does not have IBIS at all, which is one of the things that we're going to talk about. So that gives you a basic overview, but you can imagine how big those RAW files are coming out of a 102 megapixel CMOS 2 sensor. They are hefty. Hefty indeed. Now, I want to get into this thing that a lot of people seem excited about, which is this one lens, many different camera sort of thing. And DP Review did a really nice job of sort of graphing this out for us so we can take a look at it in their review. And basically, the native proportions for the sensor are 4-3. If you're shooting 4-3 at the 28 millimeter equivalent, which would be native for that lens, it's 102 megapixels. If you go to the 35 millimeter equivalent, so now we're doing this thing where it's doing the cropping in on the sensor to give you the effect of more focal length. At the 35 millimeter equivalent, it's a 62 megapixel file. At the 50 millimeter equivalent, it's a 31 megapixel file. And at the 63 millimeter equivalent, which is the most telephoto-ish it goes, it's a 20 megapixel equivalent. Okay. And then you go down to the different aspect ratios. It has 3-2, 16:9, 65:24, 17:6, 3:4, 1:1, 7:6, and 5:4. You can get all the way down to 9 megapixels with this camera if you shoot, for example, at the 17:6 aspect ratio and you shoot at the 63 millimeter equivalent, you end up with a 9 megapixel shot because you're really cropping in on that sensor. Yes, you have this nice big sensor. And then what Fujifilm has done is make it easy to play with that sensor in the sense that you can have different aspect ratios and you can have different crops on the sensor in different aspect ratios too. And a lot of people are really jazzed about this because they're saying, okay, I just have to carry around one camera with a small fixed lens and I can do all these different things with it. Well, we have had aspect ratios and digital crops and all that stuff for a long time on a lot of different cameras. And I was thinking about how often do I use those? And the answer is hardly ever, hardly ever. And I do use the 2X digital teleconverter on my OM system cameras when I need a little extra reach, but it's not cropping in on the sensor on that one. It's actually a digital teleconverter. But I don't crop in on the sensors with any of my cameras very often. So I'll shoot, for instance, with the Nikon, it's 24 megapixel. I shoot at 24 megapixel. I don't crop it down to, you know, for instance, if I'm going to put an APS-C lens on there, I don't crop it down to that because it drops precipitously from my 24 megapixels when I start doing that, as does actually the Fujifilm as well. So I think one of the things that have a lot of people excited, this ability to have these different crops on the sensor and the different aspect ratios, are something that, honestly, I'm just not that interested in. I would rather carry a couple different lenses, a couple different compact lenses, and just switch lenses instead of fooling around with the crops. Now, that's just me. All of this, of course, is just me. But it's one of the reasons why I'm not as excited about the camera as other folks are. And then, of course, we get to some of the obvious things, which it doesn't have the hybrid viewfinder, which would be terrific on this camera. I think it would be very interesting. And it doesn't have IBIS. So it doesn't have sensor-based image stabilization for still photography. Both of those things or both of those omissions make a lot of sense because, again, remember how compact this camera is for a medium format camera. There just isn't a lot of room to be fooling around with this stuff inside that body. And Fujifilm probably hasn't developed image stabilization for that sensor yet that could be this compact. As we saw with the X100 series, several iterations down the road, we finally, just recently, got sensor-based image stabilization for that camera, but it took them a while to figure out how to do that without compromising the rest of the camera. And I know that's very important to Fujifilm. You know, once they have a camera design, once they have what they view as the essence of this particular camera, they don't want to compromise it when they add new features. They want those features to fit within their vision of that camera. And I'm sure that's what we're looking at here with the 100RF. So it doesn't have stabilization, doesn't have the hybrid viewfinder. Okay, fine. You could argue with a 28 millimeter lens, which is, if you're shooting natively with this camera, that's the focal length you're going to be at a lot. You probably don't need stabilization that often, at least not like you do with a longer lens. However, the one thing I'll come back to is that the maximum aperture of that lens is f4. And you know, you can get into these numbers games with when you're dealing with the different formats, but I think that works out in full frame terms to something like a maximum aperture of f3.3 or something like that. Let's just say f4 because that's what it says on the lens. That is not super slow, but it's certainly not fast, which means then if you don't have image stabilization, then you will be thinking about shutter speed and ISO a lot with this camera when you start getting into lower light situations. It would have helped, in my opinion, to have a little faster lens on here. I think that would have been cool. And that's one of the things that the Leica Q has going for it. It has that f1.7 lens on there, and it has pretty high megapixel full frame sensor to go with it, and it has image stabilization. But you know, the Leica is also basically $1,500 more than this Fujifilm camera. There's always all these wonderful things to think about, right? You go, but what about this? But what about that? Let's get to workflow and the size of the files, because this is something that's really top of mind for me these days. I'm doing the mobile photography online workshop right now. We have one more session coming up this week. And one of the things that we've been working with is using our iPads for our mobile workflow when we're on the go, when we're out traveling, or when we're just kicking around the house on the couch or whatever. Taking that SD card out of, in my case, the OM3 or the X100V or the Nikon ZF, but those RAW files, even if I'm shooting in RAW, those RAW files, you know, the Nikon's 24 megapixels, Fujifilm is, I believe, 24 megapixels, and the OM3 is 20 megapixels. I mean, they're not huge, right? They're manageable. The modern day iPads and even the modern day iPhones can deal with those RAW files without too much problem. Those cameras are extremely compact and, you know, they fit in my nimble bags and all that good stuff. So if I decided instead to shoot with the Fujifilm, the GFX100RF, and I wanted RAW technology, I wanted RAW files, then, you know, I'm going to have files that are naturally much bigger, and they're really going to crunch into my existing workflow. Again, this is like my personal thing, right? Because a lot of people are going, hey, I'm going to take that camera, I'm going to plug it into a computer. I don't really care how big those RAW files are. I just want what they produce. And I think that's fantastic. And a lot of times I'm plugging my SD cards into a computer as well. However, I'm still thinking about how big those RAW files are and what I get from them. And one of the things that I've talked about a fair amount in our mobile photography workshop is that the upsampling software we have available to us these days is amazing. And I talked about last week the resize function that's in Photomator. And Photomator runs on my iPad, right? My iPad 7. And it can take those 5,000 on the longest side OM3 files and in just a few seconds, make them 10,000 pixels on the longest side. And not only not degrade the quality, but they look better to me because it's using AI and machine learning to do that upsampling. So I'm thinking, this is really nice, right? So I'm going around shooting 20 megapixel RAW files that are very easy on my workflow. I can manage them on my iPad, my iPhone, my laptop, and yes, my desktop computer if I have to. And if one of those images needs a little bit more resolution on my iPad, not to mention all the tools I have on my regular computer, I can upsize it to basically twice as many pixels on the longest side. Having that option, I'd rather have that option that way than, you know, dealing with really big RAW files every time I choose RAW for the camera. So for me personally, that's another reason why the 100RF wouldn't work in my workflow, because I do like to shoot RAW. I like to actually shoot RAW plus JPEG, and the JPEGs are going to be bigger too. And I like, you know, having them work with my little SD card reader that plugs into my iPad that opens up in Nitro or Photomator, and I go from there, and there's not a lot of stress in the situation. So I think it really comes down to then, how do you shoot? What are your priorities? As photography always does for all of us, especially when we're thinking about gear. My question is, or one of my questions is, that these reviewers, and there's a whole bunch of them that are really super excited about this camera, what is their workflow? Are they mobile photographers at all? Are they on the go, or is everything going into a desktop computer and opening up in Lightroom Classic? You know, I don't obviously know the answer to that question, but it seems like it would have to be something very robust to be excited about carrying around a medium format camera a lot. A lot of them are sort of saying, this is my dream camera, this is the camera I'm going to be carrying. Well, then that would tell me that's like the camera you're carrying with you most of the time. And that's a lot of camera. Going back to this, hats off to Fuji for creating this camera. It is so fun right now to have new cameras hitting the market that are different and unique and innovative. You know, Sigma did the BF. Not a camera that I would shoot with, but a camera that I admire, you know, for its ingenuity. I love what Fujifilm has done with this camera, the GFX 100RF, but it's not a camera that I'll be investing in. Let's take a look at some industry news, because there's a lot going on right now. We just had this big announcement from Fujifilm that we talked about today. And then, this is on DP Review, I have a link in the show notes, Canon's latest Instagram post teases two new cameras coming next week. And this post is from the 19th, so we're talking about March 26th, which is, if you're listening to this podcast on the 25th, we're talking about basically tomorrow, alrighty? Canon posts a teaser across the social media channels promising that something is coming soon. The post features two cameras shrouded in shadow with a large V between them and the date March 26. Quote, in 1 week, a new chapter begins. We promise it's worth the wait, end quote, says Instagram caption. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at the link in our bio to be among the first to know. Of course, as the teaser, details are minimal, but the photo does provide some worthwhile details. One of the cameras is less hidden in shadow than the other, revealing a bit more. It looks remarkably like a Canon PowerShot V1, which was recently released in Asia during CP+. You can even make out the 8.2 to 25.6 millimeter lens, which is what the V1 features. So it seems safe to bet, to guess, that we will see a broader release of the new compact vlogging camera. The second, though, is much darker. Even when brightened, it doesn't reveal any additional details. However, the giant V in the image suggests that both cameras will fall in the company's V series of vlogging and creator cameras. It looks to be only slightly larger than the PowerShot V1, though the lens seems quite a bit larger than the V1's. It's hard to tell if it's another fixed lens compact or if it could be an interchangeable lens system for vloggers. Luckily, the announcement is soon, so we don't need to wait much longer to find out what Canon is hinting at. So this is exciting. There's been a lot of discussion, really, online about, is this compact camera thing, is it just a temporary fad, you know, this renaissance for compact cameras, or is this something that's really coming around to stay? And there are people on both sides of the argument. I know OM System says, we don't really have the bandwidth to revisit compact cameras, so we're going to stay out of that. Fujifilm has said that we think that compact cameras have a real place in today's marketplace, and we're really interested in them. Canon definitely seems to be in the, we're really interested in them as well. The thing about it is, though, that the cameras that we're seeing that are coming out, the compact cameras, are designed for content creators, and so they have real video orientation to them. Whereas, you know, a lot of us will shoot video every now and then, but still photography is more our thing. To me, what's going to be interesting, and the next little news story will also hint at this, is that this compact camera thing that we're in the middle of, is it mainly for vloggers, or is there something for, you know, the other side of the fence as well? That remains to be seen. We will find out very soon on what Canon's latest view is. And then, guess what? Here's another story. This one's on DP Review as well. Sony's mysterious teaser sets the stage for a March 26 reveal. They're both doing it on the same day. What the heck is going on? Today seems to be the day for teasers, with March 26 shaping up as the day for announcements. Canon just shared a teaser suggesting two new cameras coming on March 26, and now Sony has shared a mysterious YouTube video teasing a new camera also coming on the same day. The video is short and has very little information, typical of teaser content. The camera is heavily cloaked in shadow. It primarily reveals the sensor and lens mount, along with a go small, shoot big tagline. The first part of that phrase suggests a smaller form factor. The shoot big portion, though, along with the view of the lens mount, gives away that it is an interchangeable lens camera. The rest of the video doesn't provide much more than a button labeled 5 and a 3.5 millimeter jack. The video caption simply states, "Be ready for the announcement of a new product," and provides the announcement time as March 26 at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. So on March 26, then, not only is Canon going to announce two new cameras, Sony is going to announce at least one new camera. But again, to me, it feels like a video-focused camera, maybe another vlogging camera. We'll have to wait and see. Regardless, this is a lot of fun. And when we're talking about, you know, Fujifilm's announcement last week, these are very different cameras than what Fujifilm has done, which is also fun. Suddenly, this is a great time of year to be following the news in the world of photography. If there's anything interesting in these new announcements, we'll talk about them next week. I have one other fun news story for you. I think this is interesting. I don't know what to make of it. This is on fstoppers.com, and there's a link in the show notes. Easily create custom Lightroom presets with ChatGPT. Let me read you what they have to say here. Artificial intelligence has rapidly expanded what you can do in photography, and now it's stepping into Lightroom presets. Creating custom presets that match the editing style of images you admire can be tricky, but using AI can make this process simpler and faster. Coming to you from Anthony Morganti, this informative video demonstrates how to create Lightroom presets with ChatGPT by analyzing the edits of an image you admire and applying those adjustments to your own photographs. Morganti shows how to begin by selecting two JPEG images, one representing the editing style you'd like to emulate, and the other your own unedited photo. After uploading these to ChatGPT, you provide specific instructions about the exact style elements you want the AI to match, such as brightness, tonal range, and color saturation. Morganti points out that being precise in your instructions will greatly affect the accuracy of the resulting preset. However, the effectiveness varies. In Morganti's experiments, the initial preset was impressively accurate, but subsequent attempts needed minor adjustments. And it goes on from there. So the video is here with the link, and you can check it out. I think it's interesting. I'd be curious if any of you tried it, if you would post on either the Inner Circle site or on our Facebook page what your results were. But it's not, I have to tell you, it's not a use of ChatGPT that I initially would have imagined. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to remind you about the My TDS Moment recordings that we're doing right now. We have some great recordings. We really, it's been fantastic experience for me interacting with members from our community and talking about the various TDS moments. I have left the calendar open through March and I think even one date into April on Fridays. If you haven't got around to doing this yet and you wanted to, I want to give you the opportunity to do that. There's a link in the show notes to the meeting calendar. And all you have to do is click on the link, go to the day that you want, and then there'll be a block of times that are available. Pick the time that works best for you. And then you can talk about maybe a moment over the years that where the podcast or interaction with a community member or something that happened at a workshop has really stayed with you over all these months, days, and maybe even years. It's a lot of fun, and it's been surprising to me the little things that have stayed with people or have made a big impression. Anyway, if you want to participate, this is all going to be for podcast number 1000 that's going to air in May. We're going to have fun interviews. We're going to have TDS moments, and we're going to have some other surprises. If you want to be a part of that show, just click on the link in the show notes, book an appointment, and then you and I will be talking on Zoom, and you can share your TDS moment as well. I want to acknowledge our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that not only support our community month in and month out, they're also just the backbone of our whole existence here. Inner Circle members have tremendous influence on, you know, what we do from year to year, the things that they would like me to talk about, the topics that they would like for the online workshops, and the places to visit for our physical workshops. And having this community, having other people to hang out with that sort of see the world the way that you do, this is one of the things that has come up a lot in our TDS moments that people appreciate about what we're doing here is not just the podcast, not just me talking into a microphone, but the entire community that, you know, is around all of that and the people that they've met over the years and the interactions that they've had both online and in person. If you want to become part of this Inner Circle, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can sign up there, and then soon you'll be receiving email from me with access to our Inner Circle space on Derek Story Online, discount codes, and all the other good stuff. I'd like to thank our Inner Circle members for their support. We just couldn't do it without you, and thanks so much. And finally, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. I remember when inkjet printing first really kind of came into my consciousness in terms of, wow, digital photography can have this beautiful artistic moment, just like the darkroom, only a lot easier and with a lot more control. And when that red light went on in my head, I go, this is amazing. And even then, I think the inkjet printers were very interesting, and I was able to produce very good stuff in the early days of inkjet printing. And it has just become easier, more affordable, and in a lot of ways more exciting because of how good these printers are and how good the tools are that we have to work with them. One of the most important, of course, being the paper that we run through the printer itself. Red River paper, for me, has been instrumental in my growing love for inkjet printing because I can see all the different things that I can do and how different paper surfaces influence my image and how people respond to those things that I print out, whether they're fine art greeting cards or prints. It seems to have an impression that's much different than showing them a picture on my iPhone. So I want to thank Red River Paper not only for being a sponsor of the Digital Story, it's been so important to us, but also just for keeping me excited about printing and bringing the darkroom to my desktop in a way that I never could have imagined back when digital photography started. If you want to learn more about Red River Paper, just click on the tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, nose around a bit. Make sure you use our coupon code and then order yourself some paper and make some beautiful artwork. A big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Pretty interesting stuff this week and possibly interesting stuff next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.